1904, Paris. A chemistry laboratory at the College of Sorbonne. Eugène Schuller sits hunched over a half a dozen test tubes. He wipes a bead of sweat from his brow. The room feels suffocating. He's bored. His work as a research assistant is far from scintillating. He wants more. Nearby, Schuller's boss, Professor Victor Auger, is speaking to a friend who's visiting the lab. Schuller begins eavesdropping. The friend is in a sour mood.
Business at my salon is stagnant. My customers want hair dye, but I refuse to offer it.
Why?
They irritate the scalp. Some of my customers even claim it gives them headaches. I don't know. Maybe it's the lead. I think it causes side effects.
Sounds like you need a better formula.
Clearly, but I'm not a scientist. It's not like I can just invent one.
When Schuller hears this, he can't resist.
Sir, I think I can help you with your problem.
The men look over to Schuller, surprised.
And who exactly are you?
Professor Auger glares at Schuller.
He's just a laboratory assistant, fresh out of school. Where did you go to school, young man?
The Institute of Applied Chemistry. First in my class.
And what do you know about hair dye?
I know how to mix compounds.
The man considers young Schuller. It's risky, hiring a random lab assistant to tinker with chemicals. But maybe it's worth the gamble.
So you think you can do better? I can't pay you much.
That's all right, sir. I like a challenge.
Well, hold on a minute, Schuller. You work for me. You don't have time for this.
Well, then, I quit.
Until this moment, Schuller was on the path to becoming a researcher at one of the world's best universities. And now, he's giving it all up for a job that pays the equivalent of $260 a month today. But Schuller quickly loses patience with the salon owner's many whims. So he bails on that, too. He drains his savings to scrape together 800 francs, $4,000 today, and rents a small two-bedroom apartment that he makes into a home and a laboratory. And it's there that he begins to tinker with dyes endlessly. Schuller's no stranger to hard work. Growing up, his parents owned a pastry shop, and each morning before school, he would wake up early to help them bake. He tests concoctions on his own dark, wavy hair. The early results are a disaster, but Schuller just keeps experimenting. With each failure, he believes he's actually getting closer to the right mix. Little does he know, when he gets it right, he'll change the face of the beauty industry forever. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars.
Yes.
In our last episode, Estee Lauder slowly expanded its small luxury makeup company in the United States. Meanwhile, French company L'Oréal saw an opportunity to grow its popular hair care business by expanding distribution. Now, we're rewinding to their beginnings. Both companies started with a bold idea and capitalized on cultural changes. But there can be no growth without risk. This is Episode 2, Do or Die. Paris, 1908. Eugène Schuller smiles proudly and hands a salon owner a bottle. His experiment is finally bearing fruit, and he's feeling an adrenaline rush that almost masks his exhaustion. I've finally done it. Synthetic hair dye. The salon owner opens the bottle and gives the dye a skeptical sniff.
And what makes your dye better than what we already have?
For starters, it's much gentler on the scalp, and I have many more color options. Tell me, do the dyes you use now use henna?
Yes, or mineral salts.
Those will do just fine if the customer wants their hair to be black or bright red. But with my product, you can get a variety of subtle hues. Honey blonde, caramel, auburn. It will look much more natural, as if they didn't dye their hair at all.
That all sounds well and good, but how do I know it won't have the same problems as other hair dyes?
I've tested it on myself. It works.
Of course, Schuller doesn't tell the owner how much his hair has suffered for the sake of science. But he's managed to come up with a dye he believes is good enough to patent.
Okay, I'll try it. Give me a few boxes.
If you want to keep up with the competition, you'll want more soon.
In 1909, with his patent in hand, Schuller officially launches his company. But he picks a name that's not exactly catchy. He calls his new venture the French Company of Inoffensive Hair Dyes. Schuller quickly realizes it's a mouthful, so he renames the business after his very first product, L'Oréal, a name inspired by a popular hairstyle of the time known as the halo, in which a woman's hair is teased in a circular shape to frame her head. Schuller knows stylists are key to his product's success. Women trust their hairdressers and will be more willing to try a new product they recommend. Thankfully, he has just the plan to get them on board. 1918, Paris. A sales rep pulls up outside Schuller's apartment and laboratory and rings his doorbell. Schuller runs out to meet him, fresh from mixing more products, peeling off a soiled pair of gloves.
Well, how'd business go today?
The sales rep gestures to the near-empty basket on the front of his bicycle.
It went very well, sir. I sold everything.
Fantastic news. Were the hairdressers enthusiastic?
Very, sir. One mentioned using the dyes in an upcoming fashion show, and they say their customers want more variety.
All in due time. I only have a few shades now, but one day soon they'll have more options than they know what to do with.
Schuller plucks a magazine from the basket of the sales rep's bike.
And did they like the new magazine?
They said they've never seen anything like it, sir.
That's exactly what I like to hear.
La coiffure de Paris, or in English, Paris hairstyle, is a Schuller creation. It's the very first magazine for hair care professionals. A whole new genre. The magazine has articles on styles and hair care, and plenty of ads for his line of dyes. Schuller also starts a school, personally training hairdressers in how to apply his dyes. But those lessons don't come cheap. Wanting a return on their investment, they in turn push the dyes on their customers. The school's graduates effectively become Schuller's brand ambassadors. He even recruits a celebrity hairdresser who formerly worked for Russian royalty to help showcase his products. By 1921, L'Oréal has permanent offices in London and New York, in addition to its Paris headquarters. Products are exported to 17 countries, including the United States, Italy, England, the Netherlands, and Brazil. Schuller's timing is perfect. World War I is over, and short hairstyles like the flapper bob are in fashion. With less length to work with, women turn to color and shape to stand out.
American actresses Jean Harlow and Mae West are known for their bleach blonde hair. And Shuler has a product for those who want to emulate their look. He calls it L'Oreal Blanc. An advertisement proclaims, "Platinum Blonde, the new shade of bleached white hair, is all the rage among movie stars." But while Shuler is growing his company across Europe, a young, tenacious American woman in New York City is also getting an early start in the biz. 1924, Queens, New York. 16-year-old Josephine Esther Menzer, known as Esty to her parents, has a rare afternoon off. She's finished her homework and her father's released her from her shift at the family hardware store. Her parents are immigrants from Eastern Europe, and her uncle, John Schatz, has come from Hungary to live with them. He's usually out back using an old stable as a makeshift laboratory for his new business. Now, at the kitchen table, she's getting a front row view of his concoctions. Schatz is carefully transferring a pot of face cream into small individual jars. Esty looks on, transfixed.
"What does it do?"
Schatz is eager to impart his wisdom. He's an esthetician with his own line of beauty products. Esty, ambitious beyond her years, is fascinated by his business savvy.
"It'll take away redness, soothe blemishes. It's a facial in a jar."
"And how did you figure out how to make it?"
"I'm a chemist, and there's a science to everything, even beauty."
"How do your customers know how to use it?"
"I show them. If you massage the cream into the skin, you get better results."
Esty is fascinated. She decides to start mixing her own product, which she calls the Super Rich All-Purpose Cream. A smooth, versatile, lightweight cream made with extra-rich oils, it can be used as a cleanser, foundation, or night cream. And her high school friends become her eager guinea pigs. As she passes out free samples in the school hallways, Esty's social status rises. She realizes that these little jars of cream are so much more than just lotions. They're her future. Her timing is exquisite. It's the roaring 20s. More women are joining the workforce and earning money. Enough, even once the Great Depression hits, to afford small luxuries like face cream and makeup. And with the flapper style in vogue, makeup is no longer seen as something vulgar, but normal, even desirable. And Esty is ready to capitalize on that demand. But vanity is a universal impulse, and American women aren't the only ones investing in their appearance. In Paris, Schuler notices that women are paying more attention not just to the color of their hair, but also its general upkeep. He senses an untapped market. Shampoo exists, but it's not widely available at an affordable price. And Schuler wants to change that. In 1928, he launches OCAP Hair Lotion, the first mass-market shampoo. It's a foam hair wash that doesn't require water. Now, he just has to figure out the marketing. 1931, Paris, L'Oreal headquarters. Schuler sits in a meeting with one of his sales representatives, brainstorming.
"I want to get the word out about our OCAP hair lotion. Sales are good, but they could be better," the salesman considers.
"Our marketing is already strong. We're in all the salons."
"Not good enough. I want this product in every woman's bathroom."
An idea sparks. He walks over to a wall full of L'Oreal advertising mock-ups. Schuler often commissions popular artists to create the advertisements for his company. The black and white artwork's the size of a magazine cover and looks stylish enough to belong in a museum.
"What if we make this 20 feet tall? No, 30 feet. And then we drape it on a building."
"A building-size ad? Has that ever been done before?"
"If not, we'll be the first."
And just like that, one of the very first billboards is born. A giant sheet draped over the side of a building takes the brand's image to new heights, literally. And then, Schuler gets a bump from an unexpected place. French politics. In 1936, the left-wing movement Le Front Populaire wins the general election, ushering in its first socialist prime minister. Now the French are getting something new and wonderful, paid vacations. Inspired by his own problem of getting sunburns while sailing on vacation, Schuller senses a new opportunity. He makes the first commercial sunscreen called Ombre Solaire. The ad promises tans without sunburning and softens the skin. It even has a pleasant smell with notes of rose and jasmine. It's not long before sunbathers across France eagerly slather themselves with it. By 1939, the company is officially renamed L'Oréal and becomes a major brand, storming salons and cosmetic counters all over Europe. But across the pond, another savvy beauty expert believes she has the ultimate edge. She knows what women really want. And while she will have to start small, growing a following by giving away products for free, she will soon make her mark in the beauty industry, one makeover at a time.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind.
It's 1935, New York City. Estée Lauder is bent over an apartment stove, carefully stirring a pot of face cream. Her 2-year-old son, Leonard, plays nearby. Estée has had a bit of a makeover. She's taken her husband Joseph's last name and given her first name a French spin, adding an accent and changing the pronunciation to convey glamour. She's no longer Estée, she's Estée. Lauder turns off the stove and dashes to the door. She opens it to reveal a middle-aged woman, a customer.
Please come in. Thank you. Something sure smells good.
The woman follows Lauder through the apartment. Lauder is 29 years old with blonde hair, hazel eyes, and gorgeous, clear, fresh-looking skin. Just looking at her inspires confidence in her beauty advice. She leads her customer into the bedroom and gestures at her bed.
Please feel free to sit here.
She reaches for a jar of face cream and begins to carefully apply it to the woman's face.
Will this really work? Every woman can be beautiful. Your skin will be smoother than it's ever been. Trust me. If it looks half as good as yours, I'll be happy. I'm going to send you on your way with free samples of all the products I'm using. If you like them, make sure to tell all your friends.
Lauder finishes the facial. She holds out a mirror. The woman examines her skin in astonishment.
I look 5 years younger. My face feels like silk.
Lauder hands her a black and white jar of face cream. This is not a sale. It's simply a gift. A stepping stone as Lauder patiently waits for her big break.
How did you get to be so good at this? Practice. I've always loved making women feel beautiful.
While Schuler's fascination with hair dye is born from entrepreneurial ambition and his tendency to tinker, Lauder is motivated by the transformative power of skincare and makeup on women's self-confidence. But she, too, sees profit potential in those black and white jars. 1935, New York City. Estée Lauder sits at the House of Ash Blondes, a beauty salon on East 60th Street near Central Park. Lauder's been staking out this salon. She began plying the owners subtly. First, she patronized the shop as a customer, casually passing free samples to the owner. Then, after weeks of nudging, she won her first big break. The owner hired Lauder to run the beauty counter. This is her chance to actually sell her products for money, and she's making the most of the opportunity. Holding jars of her products, Lauder approaches a woman who's sitting under the hairdryer.
Would you like a free makeover while you wait?
The woman looks skeptical.
What's the catch? There is no catch. Just thought you might like a little extra pampering.
The woman nods reluctantly. Lauder gets to work, applying the velvety cream to the woman's face. She creates a light layer, allowing it to sink in.
That smells expensive. What does it do?
Lauder beams. What a compliment.
This cream will polish any imperfections and make your face feel smooth as silk. Now let this set, and when you're done drying, we'll finish you up.
The woman sits back and closes her eyes, enjoying this relaxing moment. Lauder moves right on to the next customer, giving her the same spiel. A few minutes later, when the first woman has been moved out from under the dryer, Lauder returns.
Now doesn't that feel lovely?
Lauder removes the cream and quickly begins her signature quick makeover. A little foundation, a bit of turquoise eyeshadow, and some red lipstick. She works quickly and meticulously, not wanting to overstay her welcome. When she finishes, she holds out a mirror for the woman to admire her handiwork.
What do you think?
Before the woman has a chance to answer, Lauder reassures her.
Now remember, you don't need to purchase anything today. Here's a free sample of the cream I used for you to keep trying on your own. When you run out, you know where to find me.
The woman stares at herself, flabbergasted by the transformation, as she tucks the jar in her purse. With beauty salons, Lauder has found an undiscovered channel for selling makeup. This success motivates her to seek out more opportunities, and the demand takes her 1,000 miles away. January 1936, Miami Beach, Florida. Lauder and her son Leonard, now just shy of 3 years old, get out of a cab. Lauder's friend, a woman named Lily, greets them.
Welcome to Miami Beach.
Lauder holds young Leonard on her hip. She looks exhausted.
Ah, we were on the train from New York for 2 days. Oh, you poor dear. Where are your things? We checked them at the station. I'm hoping you can help us find a place to stay. Of course. I know a great place, close to all those posh hotels where your customers are. Future customers. They're not customers yet. How much does this place cost? They say it will be $35 for the two of you for the week. Another $58 for food.
Lauder's face falls.
I just don't have that kind of money. A friend from New York is staying at the Admiral Hotel. Maybe we can stay with her? I can take you there. So, what's your plan here? You're a long way from home without much of a budget. Well, I noticed all of my customers in New York have started coming to Miami for the winter. I saw an opportunity. It's true, Miami Beach has become the winter destination for anybody who's somebody. The Duke and Duchess of Windsor were here just last week.
the unexpectedly high costs of food and housing in Miami soon leave Lauder with only $5 left in her purse. So she gets to work. She sends cards to potential clients announcing her arrival in Miami and networks in hotel lobbies. 2 weeks later, after a busy day darting around the lobby of the Roney Hotel, Lauder surveys her inventory in her hotel room. Barely any is left. She sold almost her entire initial supply. She grabs a piece of stationery from the desk and starts writing a letter to her husband.
Joseph, you're not going to believe what an incredible success this trip has been. Florida is the place for cosmetics. Women are in the spending mood here. Please send more products as soon as possible. And darling, I'm sorry, but we'll need more time. Business is thriving. I can't quit now.
As the years go on, their annual visits grow longer and more profitable. It's not yet a crowded field, but her success will create competition. And when it comes to selling beauty, the competition is always ugly. In our next episode, Estée Lauder competes with Revlon and launches Clinique, the first hypoallergenic brand, to a bumpy start. Meanwhile, a young copywriter creates a new slogan for L'Oreal that will go down in advertising history. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is episode 2 of Estée Lauder versus L'Oreal for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said at the time. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. If you'd like to learn more about Estée Lauder, we recommend the book The Company I Keep, My Life in Beauty by Leonard Lauder. I'm your host, David Brown. Erin Conley wrote this story, voice acting by Michelle Phillippe. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.